Conference Committee on Senate File 2651 will come to order. Before we begin, I just want to acknowledge some people who have worked very hard on both the House and the Senate side. Sometimes when we, in the rush of getting things done, we forget to acknowledge the people who are really truly responsible for making sure that all of this comes together. I'd like to acknowledge Representative Dill and his staff, Kirk, and House Research Analyst Janelle Taylor, and his Eileen Shore. Thank you for your hard work on the House side. Mary Bevis, my legislative assistant, Marianne Heck, my committee administrator, Greg Knopf, Senate Research. Carlin Doyle, who has received a trial by fire this session in her new position as committee Senate counsel, and all of the other staff, of course, the revisor's office that is always works behind the scenes and quickly re-engrossing everything we pass and decide and change our minds to do. So thank you all for your hard work and efforts, and I'm looking forward to a productive conference committee. One of the principal points of Senate File 2651 is the Outdoor Heritage Citizens Council. That is something I'd like to highlight this morning in this morning's discussion. The House was not able to hear a lot of the testimony that the Senate heard. And so I'd like to, because this is such an important issue, because this issue has been followed so closely in the media and because it has such an impact on the ballot initiative this fall, I want to bring forward and reiterate some of the issues that brought forth the Citizens Council, issue. Both versions of Senate File 2651, House and Senate, have a version of the council in it, and so one of the primary goals of our conference committee is to resolve those differences. Representative Dill, want to make opening remarks?
Just welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. I have a list here of people who would like to testify on the Citizens Council issue. The first person I have on my list is Don McMillan, but is there anyone who wanted to testify first to lead it off? The first three people I have on my list is Don McMillan, Les Bench, and Joe Dugan. Maybe those three people could just come to the table, and there's three chairs there, and you guys can go in whichever order you prefer. I also have Dave Zentner, Shirley Hunt, Alexander, Dick Anfang, Paul Austin, Bob Austin. And if you're interested in testifying, please don't raise your hand. Just approach one of the staff members. You can approach. Mary Bevis is sitting right at the end there. You can just tell her, and she'll let us know and get you on the witness list. So welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Don McMillan. I am president of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. Most of you know that the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance, or MOHA, is an alliance of almost all of the major and minor hunting and conservation, fishing and trapping groups in Minnesota. We just picked up another group this week that I hadn't heard of called the Land of Lakes Bow Fishing Association, and we received an education on Wednesday night on how bow fishing fits in with our natural resources program and control of rough fish and lakes and so forth. So we've got a pretty good coalition out there. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before this conference committee. I know that doesn't always happen. The conference committee doesn't necessarily always have testimony, so we feel very privileged to be able to do that. This whole amendment for clean water, fish and wildlife, and so forth, as you know, started many years ago, back in the days of Senator Bob Lassard, when he was chairman of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee that you now chair, Senator Chaudhry. And It, at that time, was pretty much of a bill that would benefit Fish and Game, the stakeholders that we represent, and since then there have been some changes. And I think we've accepted the changes for a lot of reasons. The arts are something that we all enjoy here in Minnesota. I certainly love the arts that we have, and when you stop and think of it, Minnesota has probably spawned more wildlife artists than any other state in the union. So we're comfortable with that. Clean water, absolutely. I think that goes without saying that without clean water, we're literally dead. So there's no problem there. And it broadens the constituency to help make this thing pass. And we want this to pass in November. And frankly, we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that we get the votes of our constituency. And we've got very broad roots constituency out there throughout the state when you consider all the groups that belong to MOHA. We started about a year ago doing outreach meetings and talking to our constituency and found out that the big concern was what's going to happen to this money. And that's where the Citizens Council came about. And when I say a year ago, I think that's kind of when we started talking about it. We found out that without a Citizens Council that would somehow direct where this money would go and where it would benefit fish and wildlife, our stakeholders, fish and wildlife, the trappers and so forth, there was a lot of serious doubt about whether or not people were going to vote for it. And we heard that time and time again. I just talked to Mark Johnson with the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association yesterday or the day before, and he said they took a survey, not a scientific survey, but they fanned out to a lot of their members in the number of thousands and asked them what their feeling was. And they all, I mean, it was a vast majority, like about 70-some percent said that they would not vote for it without a Citizens Council directing where the funds would be spent. And when we're talking about directing now, there's a difference, I understand, between appropriating and directing. We want to be in the directing seat. We think our stakeholders need to be there, and we're talking about, again, fishermen, hunters, trappers. We would like our stakeholders to be a part of that council. Frankly, we'd like to share that with the legislature. We have no problem with having some legislators on there. In fact, we look at this as a partnership with you folks. So from that standpoint, having a mix such as Senate version had, which is 10 and 6, 10 stakeholders and 6 legislators, that's fine because that solidifies that partnership so that the legislature is a part of the decision-making in directing that money. You haven't lost that. It's still there. And I think we'd work well together. The House bill eliminates Forest Legacy, the Forest Legacy program, which I think is extremely important for northern Minnesota. Entirely different issues up there, as Senator Saxog knows, than what we have in the southern two-thirds of the state. We've got a lot of forest land up there that's going on sale, and we'd like to see a lot of that land stay in the resources pool so that we can enjoy it. We can enjoy the outdoors. And that's what that Forest Legacy Council would seek to do. We think the matching grant program is extremely important, and that's in the Senate bill also. The matching grant program brings local people into play with this, and it enhances the passage of this amendment. Having the bill sunset in 6 years, as in the House amendment, I don't think is a good idea because I'm not sure why we would want it to sunset in 6 years. Obviously, any statute can be changed, so nothing that you folks create is set in stone. We understand that. But we want to get off to a good start. We want to enthusiastically support this amendment and send our troops out there. We've got a lot of people out there that are willing to go out and put up yard signs, bumper stickers, go out and talk and tell their neighbors about it. And if we don't get that group on our side, if we don't have an assurance that the stakeholders, the fishermen, the trappers, and the hunters and so forth in Minnesota, if they don't have a say in how that money is going to be spent, we don't believe that we'll get the response that we need from our stakeholders to make this thing pass. And as I said several months ago, it would be a crying shame if this thing failed by 1% and we lost it. And just because we didn't have that stakeholders council built into the legislation. So that's basically all I would like to say, and if you have any questions, I would be delighted to answer them. Okay, just one.
Go ahead.
Well, I had one comment specifically for Representative Dill. I had a meeting yesterday at our office with some of our staff, and there's a person there who's from up in your area, and he told me that the walleye, 6 and 8 pounders, are really biting on Crane Lake, so let's get this done and go fishing.
Well, Representative Dill. Well, actually, they are up at the Crane Lake Gorge, and so I asked the DNR to close that area. Save them until I get home.
That works, too. Mr. McMillan, does MOHA have a position on the within the legislative citizen makeup? Does it have a position on the ratio at all? I presume you'd prefer a majority of citizens, but you know, has it considered this at all? Just a general question on the ratio.
Well, I think we'd like to have at least a 60% vote, you know, be able to have a 60% ratio on there. Now, you're 10 and 6. My computer brain just snapped off this morning, so you'll have to tell me where that is. But the one that you have in your bill, Senator, is, as you know, 10 citizens and 6 legislators. And that's fine, but, I mean, I think we need at least 60% on there.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McMillan, the LCCMR has changed in the last couple of years that now is a majority legislators and a minority of citizens, but it looks in the short 2 years that it's been there that it's working very effectively, that it has buy-in from the rest of the legislature. What's your thoughts on that model, if in the end we were able to get something like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I don't believe that will sell with our constituents. I mean, it's just plain and simple. I know what they want, and they want to see a majority on there. This is new territory that we're blazing here, and they're very clear on that. It has to be a meaningful citizens' council, which means a majority of citizens as opposed to a minority of citizens. And again, don't shoot the messenger. That's what people are telling me as we go out in the field.
One thing to note, the LCCMR requires a supermajority to pass any final recommendation. So even though the citizens are in a minority in the LCCMR, it is required to have at least some citizen support in order to pass that. So it's there. We're not talking about a majority versus minority dynamic. There is a strong dynamic and input from the citizens because that their support is required to move anything forward. Yeah. And the Senate version does have this, except the citizens have a majority in the Senate version. Anything else?
Nothing that I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Dugan, are you going to be next?
Be happy to. Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Joe Dugan. I am with Pheasants Forever. Some of you just recently Pheasants Forever celebrated its 25th anniversary. It was established here in Minnesota 25 years ago. And just a few months ago, we celebrated that anniversary in St. Paul at the Xcel Energy Center. We had nearly 30,000 people come through over a period of 3 days. Pheasants Forever now in Minnesota has about 25,000 members, just shy of that. One of the things that Mr. McMillan spoke of, and I would like to speak to in particular, is the matching grants or some kind of a program that would empower the local folks in Minnesota to get involved. Pheasants Forever has got a unique structure, and I'm going to pass out. There's an article written by Dennis Anderson of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, but it speaks to the power of local conservation. And one of the hallmarks of the Senate version is this conservation matching program. And We've seen through our organization and many others in Minnesota that power, having a matching program that can local groups can apply to and do good conservation projects on the ground will multiply the efforts and the effect of this fund. Leveraging it financially as well as getting the local buy-in. There's an individual that's mentioned in that article. His name is Chuck Van Wy. I happen to know him pretty well. He can do things at the local level that oftentimes wildlife agencies and professionals can't do. He can cross the barriers with farmers, ranchers, local landowners, and talk one-on-one and get conservation projects done that, quite frankly, may or likely oftentimes will not get done. So there needs to be, we feel very strongly, a mechanism that's put in place that will motivate and incentivize that kind of local conservation. Rock County, it's an interesting, it points out in the article that at one time there was no public wildlife areas in that county. Today there's 8, in large part because of what the local Pheasants Forever chapter did down there. But the other part is because of matching grants available through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, through the Minnesota DNR, and others. So the power of incentivizing local conservation is critical. And if you look down the road, leveraging those dollars that will become available through this fund are going to deliver conservation far in excess of what it would be done if we don't engage the public and the citizen. We will develop a conservation army through this process. If I may... Representative McNamara asked about the LCCMR model, and that was a model. The LCMR was in the past, had a citizens advisory committee. And if I could just make a comment to that. And there was some controversy over that in years past, and the new LCCMR model was established that brings together a variety of citizens from the state that have background in conservation and science, et cetera. I think that's a good process. That's a process that brings together the citizens and legislators to develop a good plan, and it seems to me that is an improvement over what it was in the past. It gets more buy-in from all parties, and a model like that, I think, like in the Senate model, is preferred. That's all I have, Senator.
Questions for the witness? Okay, thank you. Mr. Bench.
Good morning. My name is Les Bench. Yesterday morning, bright and early, Gary called me before I was heading out to the fields and said it's time to put the rubber on the road and get down here. So I got off my tractor last night about 7 o'clock and drove down, and yesterday I spent putting food plots in. We just finished about 75 acres of wildlife food plots on a major restoration that we're doing. I own a business in western Minnesota. My business is hunting and fishing. It's become a passion, a business, and my life. Before that, I spent about 20 some years in the computer business, so it was a kind of deviation from going technical to doing the love of my life. I've got 3 objectives left in life, and that's to preserve, protect, and restore. Just a little trivia question to lighten things up a little bit. Does anybody know the proper day, using all the scientific data that we can gender, of when is the proper time to plant corn? There's only probably one person that knows that, and that's probably Senator Dill. That's when the oak leaves and the white oak are as big as squirrel ears. That's Mother Nature's signal. We pay attention to the environment, and the environment is so important. And I'd like to just recite a couple of demographics that I think are very, very critical. This is not a hunting and fishing issue, but it is a hunting and fishing issue. The hunting and sportsman community, the fishing community in the state of Minnesota, represents the largest industry within the state. 1.6 million people in the state of Minnesota, men and women, enjoy the sport and the resources. more than three times the number of fishermen and hunters exist than attendance to the Vikings games. The annual expenditure of Minnesota sportsmen amounts to about $2.17 billion. By the way, this data is about 2 years old, so it's probably a little bit skewed. Sportsmen support more jobs in Minnesota than 3M Corporation. 40,000 plus jobs in Minnesota are directly related to the hunting and fishing industry. And hunting and fishing, the gun and the fishing pole are no more than an excuse to get out and enjoy nature and harvest nature's bounties. We are very, very concerned about the degradation of those resources in the state of Minnesota. We need help. We need proper funding. I'm going to let the technical part about how many people on the council versus how many citizens on the council are legislators and citizens, but it's very, very important that we have a representation of the citizens. We have the capability to do this work. We've restored over 400 acres of marginal farmland into native prairie. We've restored a major wetland area. Actually, this is our seventh major wetland area that we've restored. This wetland was created or destroyed about 70-some years ago by a drainage ditch running through it and draining marginal ag land. And believe me, I am a farmer. I represent the farming community, and I also represent the sporting community. When we were started to restore this land, we had a lot of opposition from the local units of government because we were affecting a protected waters area. This was on the protected waters inventory. Now, we destroyed a wetland 70 years ago, and then we called it a protected waters. So we went through the process of the conditional use permit at the county level, and after about 15 minutes of arguing, one of the council members said, this is a restoration. This individual is not looking to put condominiums or cluster developments on it. This is a restoration project. It's one of the tributaries of the Minnesota Valley watershed that eventually drains in the Pond-de-Terre, the Minnesota River, and this one little drop in the bucket that we've restored will make that water just a little bit cleaner. We've got these type of projects times a million out there to do. We don't have the money to do those. And by the way, all of these projects were done without state or federal funds, except some of the land was put into the RIM program. Dedicated funding is extremely important. I've talked with our representatives, Bud Nornes and Senator Dan Scogin, and at first some of them weren't necessarily agreeing with the project. But as we talked and talked, the funding is not there. Are we going to take the funding from the big three, health and human services, transportation, education? It's not there. We have to create a dedicated funding for this particular resource and enhance this resource. We've been talking with many of the sportsmen, Senator Lessard and Gary Leaf. We've been making the rounds in western Minnesota. We've been networking our approach. We've got over 28 sportsmen's clubs in Otter Tail County alone. Otter Tail County has over 1,050 lakes. We have over 10% of the lakes in Minnesota. There's a lot of encroachment, destruction that's taking place, and we have to balance that playing field. And I think this is one of the ways that we can do this. Again, we have the expertise to do this. We have to work with the legislation. We have to work with the DNR, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Pheasants Forever, a regional biologist, Ducks Unlimited, Minnesota Deer Hunters. This is a cooperative effect. No one group can do it alone. We need that expertise to be able to put this together in a very comprehensive plan. Next Thursday, when MOHA is having their banquet, which I'd love to be, I've got to spend time on a more important subject. That's meeting with Gene Coleman at the University of Minnesota Morris. We're going to be discussing the LCCMR Conservation and Preservation Plan, and she was very delighted to have somebody represent the dedicated funding approach, because this is a plan. This is a very good plan, but it's only a plan. And without the funding and the dollars to implement that plan, it's dead. It's just going to consume more trees and more paper, and it's nothing. There's nothing there. So we need this dedication to preserve the resources. The one element that I saw that was in the proposal, the sunset provision, why would I as a businessman ever plan my demise and bankruptcy in 6 years' time? This is a long-term effect. This is a life project. This is an investment in our youth, in our future, of the greatest resource we got in the state of Minnesota. And if you don't think that this is in a degradation state, just start traveling and start hanging out east and see the fragmentation that exists in the different states. We need to get on top of this, and we need to put the money and the effort there, and it is a joint effort. This is not a usurping of the legislative power. This is a method of getting a team together and working together as a team to start getting this thing rolling. Thank you.
Questions for the witness? Representative Ball.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this could be for any of the witnesses. First off, thank you to Moha for your work on this issue for a lot of years. As you know, there's some we've made considerable progress, but there are still a few key differences between the House and Senate positions. One in particular, which Mr. Dugan referred to, was the grant program and how in the Senate language, 20% is designated specifically towards matching grants, and in the House position, we don't specify how much, but in effect, all of it is available for a matching grant program. Personally, I agree with your position. I would like to have as much of this money on the ground as possible, leveraging as much additional resources as we can get. Why would we not want to have all of this money available for local grants and matches? And there might be years where there's a lot of property available to us or are very important projects that would cost more than 20% of the almost $100 million available to us. Why would we not want to expand the amount of money that we would have available for those matching grants?
I think that would be acceptable to expand it.
I think the point, Representative Moe, is that there's an effort to establish a bare minimum. Certainly nothing that would limit the amount, but I think the Senate version says that there's a minimal threshold that shall be sets out a minimal threshold for local grants. So absolutely you can go beyond that. So at least that's certainly the intent, and I think that when people decide whether they're going to vote on dedicated funding, as we heard from the testimony, there's strong interest from many of these sportsmen in Minnesota that they have an idea that there would be a bare minimum set aside for specific local projects. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moe, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just referring to your language as in the side-by-side, it specifically sets up a conservation partner's account of which only 20% of the total goes into. Doesn't say that that's a minimum. It says that's how much goes into that account. I guess personally, and being from the north, I also look at Forest Legacy. There's going to be some opportunity in near term to actually, well, we might want more than that 20% also, because we have, as you know, hundreds of thousands of acres that are going to come out of rotation as that private property goes up for sale. Okay. I think that there's perhaps some compromise we could come to here, but boy, there's going to be years where we want more than 20% of that for either one of those things, I would think.
Fair enough. Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Finch, I just want to...
Finch.
Bench?
Bench, yeah.
I'm sorry. Mr. Bench, I just wanted to thank you for your plan to visit with Gene Coleman. I know there are going to be lots of hearings on that plan right now, and it's good that you're working with her.
Representative Tao. Excuse me.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I want to welcome all the testifiers. On the House side, I'm the chair in the subcommittee on licensing, and there are many boards, medical boards, chiropractors and nurses, and we have sunset almost for all of them, and they have been in existence for a long, long time. None have gone out of business. What the sunset does is, because there's a high turnover of legislators, and what it does is every 5 or 10 years, it allows or makes the board to want to come and get to know members of the legislature. So in essence, I myself hate sunsets, but what it does is it forces the board or the group, the council that's going to be created, to get to know new members of the legislature, for them to come in and ask for a renewal of the sunset. I have not seen one sunset that's not been renewed in the legislature, so I might be wrong, but I have not seen. So I just want to encourage you not to be too afraid about that piece. So
it's the what you're saying is it's the Internet Explorer version of the refresh button.
That's right.
It's a term for people who read sunset in the language for outside the Capitol, it's gone. When we read it in here, it's a review, kind of a term of art. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Senator. And since Representative Tao brought up the sunset, actually the sunset was my idea. I thought that you would like that because never was intended that you'd go out of business. It's just, as Representative Tao said, that you would come back and revisit this, because I have to tell you that having only been here 6 years, substantially less than others, I found out that we don't get it right. It's just that simple. We just don't get it right. No matter how hard we try, we need to make mid-course corrections in many things that happen around here. And if we force it back at us, that was my thought at least, that would cause us to relook at this and make some of those mid-course adjustments, like when you're pushing a field for pheasants and they're squirting out the side into a cornfield, you put a blocker over there. I mean, that's what I'm talking about here, for those of you who know about pheasant hunting. That wasn't really what I wanted to bring up. I wanted to ask Mr. Bench or any of the other testifiers. In the language that the House had, it referred to, under council recommendations, it referred to the outcomes of the Minnesota Conservation and Preservation Plan. And I heard Mr. Bench mention that plan. And I just wanted to make sure I understood. I heard you say that you supported the idea that we would be looking at a council that might embrace the outcomes relative to the outdoors. And there are other parts of that plan that have to do with the generation of electricity and transportation and how close people live to their homes. We excluded that in the language, those parts. But I just want to make sure I got that right, Mr. Bench, that you thought that was a good idea, that we were looking at that particular plan, and maybe the other testifiers would like to comment on that as well.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, when I saw the plan and the reference to it, we do not, as individuals at the local level, have that total broad base overview. And to bring in a group of distinguished citizens that are composing this plan and preparing this plan is a great resource that we can learn from and work with. I look at it as an integral part of the leadership and the guidance that we will take. And then at the local level, where we're actually putting the dams up, blocking the trenches, and planting the wildlife plots, then we get down to the local level. But the GIS surveys, looking at the watersheds, looking at all of the things that exist. It's a monstrous task, and I look very forward to getting involved with it as a remarkable tool. But this plan is only a plan, and if it isn't properly funded, it will be remain only a plan. So I look at it as a very valuable tool that we'll be using.
Mr. Dugan.
With regards to that, the Minnesota Conservation Preservation Plan, the only concern that I would say is, and I haven't seen that plan entirely, is that the 1/8 that we're talking about here is targeted toward for fish and wildlife habitat. And when I think of the tasks of the LCCMR, and there's electric generation, there's biofuels, it extends way beyond fish and wildlife habitat. And these dollars need to be focused to benefit fish and wildlife habitat, and so that's the concern. Is we don't want to. These dollars need to be focused. There are other dollars for the whole clean water component. The 1/8 is going to be targeting water. There's dollars for parks and trails. There's dollars for the arts, and there needs to be collaboration. We want to leverage all of these programs so that they one benefits the other, and we take full advantage of all the programs we have out there. So that's the only concern I would say is that what is in that LCCMR plan and the breadth of it and what to try to accomplish the goals of the LCCMR with these dollars is fine to the extent that they fit in this niche, so to speak.
Follow up from Representative Dilden.
Okay, so I sense then from the answers that the plan, a conservation and preservation plan, would be supported, and that if we focused and we laser fired in on the idea of hunting and fishing, fish and game and wildlife and wetlands and things of that, if we laser fired onto that plan on those particular things, let's just say the language actually in the constitutional question, which I think says, the funds must be expended to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish and game and wildlife. So if we said something like the outcomes of the plan that were consistent with those items, protect and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, habitat for fish, game, and wildlife, then I sense that you're totally behind that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. McMillan.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill and Representative Tao, just regarding this sunset provision, I can understand what you're saying about taking another look at it in 6 years. It's my understanding that if you pass a law or a statute that somehow at any time, 2, 3, 4 years isn't working, you have an opportunity to go back in and change it, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And I've seen this happen many times in the federal government where laws are passed, might be the Endangered Species Act or something like that, and it gets set in stone. But as you go along, you find a couple little areas where you could tweak it, and it's sometimes very difficult to do. But I think we're a lot more flexible in this legislature than we are in the United States Congress. That's my experience. But I would say that if I could bring all the voters in here and hear what Representative Tao said and Representative Dill said, that's fine, but I can't do that. So to a certain extent, and this is unfortunate, but we're looking at some cosmetic things here, that I want to have a product to sell our stakeholders, and I don't know that they would really understand that. I think that would be a real sticking point, and I don't know that we would have the ability or the time to explain that point to them. But what you say is, I can accept that, but I can't bring all those voters into this room. Thank you.
If we mean review, then why don't we just say that?
Yeah.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I just wanted to note for the record that the plan, the conservation plan, was funded by LCCMR, but it was not designed by LCCMR. LCCMR recognized that there was no statewide plan and put out requests for proposals, and it was the university that won. They had a plan to make a plan that was far superior to anybody else's, far superior. So there wasn't any question that they were the ones that were going to look at making a plan for Minnesota and pulling together all the plans and all the mapping we already had, which seems to be scattershot across the state. So I think this GIS, this mapping, is extraordinarily important. And we have we have a great resource in the university. So it's not, it wasn't really an LCCMR plan. It wasn't any input in terms of what was in it. It was its input in terms of the cash.
It was not a sportsman plan either. And, you know, one thing that I, as a member of the LCCMR, remember raising when they were, the U of M was developing this plan, is that please make sure that you involve a whole breadth of wildlife interests, including sportsman groups. And from everything I've seen, it's been a little light on that. And I think that's what the, I think that's what this council is interested in having is more input, more direct input from the sportsmen. I think what the U of M's plan is a good one, but should this council be tied to that plan when that plan has been kind of light on sportsman interests? I'm not so sure. Representative Dill.
All right. So I appreciate this particular section of our conversation, but so make sure I have it right. Like I said, inside baseball is that we know what sunsets mean. So if we had some outside baseball for the people, if we had some language that said that in 5 years that Senator Anderson and Representative Wagenius would convene a hearing to evaluate the operation of the council and the interaction with the legislature in 5 years or no later than a certain date, that would be more palatable to the groups, knowing that at that time they might just abolish you.
Well, you can abolish us at any time.
anything is possible.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, I think, and I hope that these two people that you just mentioned are still around here in 5 years. I mean, we look good, but but at any rate, sure, you know, because as I said before, you know, this is something that's going to be constantly reevaluated. I would hope so, that as legislators you do this and you look at something, and if it isn't working, you change it. I mean, that's very simple. And I'm just worried about putting things in there that are going to be lightning rods, that they're going to scare people away. And again, as I said when we started this procedure, I want this amendment to pass in November. And we're going to do everything we can to make it pass, and that includes eliminating any possible negatives. Thank you.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, why do we have to say anything about it? We know we can reevaluate and we change things every time we show up somewhere in law. So why do we even have to say anything about sunsets or reviews? Or it's no doubt going to get reviewed and checked and double-checked and so forth periodically anyway.
Well, there is nothing that precludes the legislature from reviewing any program, including this, at any time.
So why can't we just be silent on that, then, if that's going to help us?
one possible reason is that it is a new program, and that in a new program or a new council, perhaps we want to write in to make sure that it will be at least reviewed. I think that was the idea behind the sunset. But you're right. There is nothing that precludes review from the legislature, or state auditor, for that matter. Senator Fredrickson, did you have a comment or question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really didn't, but I will comment.
All right.
Called on me. I was thinking about sunsets, and over the years, I've supported sunsets, and back, you know, probably 20 years ago, they were really a big issue. Almost all councils and advisory groups had a sunset, so we would come back and review them. And I can think of a couple that did not get renewed. I can also think of one kind of humorous now around the St. Paul. Some people saw the council on seed potatoes and thought that was really frivolous. You know, we could sunset that one. About 2 weeks later, we had a lot of potato farmers from northwest Minnesota at the Capitol saying how important it was, and I think it was Senator Roger Moe that was carrying a bill to make sure it continued to exist. So people do respond. But I was thinking with a high-visibility council like this is going to be, I think it's going to get constant evaluation of how good a job it does, particularly if there are legislators on it. You know, so sunsets are probably fine. I think 6 years is way too soon. I think it should be we would do want to be further out in time, but I also don't think it's necessary because this is going to be a very high visibility council. It's going to have a lot of scrutiny because it's going to get a significant amount of tax money. And I think there would be a constant evaluation, a constant review as the recommendations come forward.
And Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is might be a semi-appropriate time for me to pitch the whole idea of forests and a minimum dedicated amount for existing forests. As you know, they're under attack, and I've been talking about this for the last couple of years, from fragmentation, that being the selling of the forest by some of the large private owners of forest land. And we've been having problems for years with a mixed ownership, in other words, a checkerboard, and we're working towards consolidation. And why do we do this? Well, these people are talking about habitat and wildlife and fish, and of course the vast Minnesota forests are some of our best habitat, and that can be preserved. It doesn't have to be rebuilt. Doesn't have to be restored. It can be preserved. And as we talk about, whether talking about cross country skiing or hunting or just plain hiking in the woods, these forests, of course, are the second big piece is they're good for recreation. Forest products is a big part of Minnesota and its economy, and a portion that's coming up very quickly is energy. And I think we know that forests sequester CO2 as well as any other part of our environment, and a healthy forest continues to do that. And the next generation of ethanol, I mean, we're talking about it's problematic restoring a lot of our prairies just because the corn is so valuable. But the next generation of ethanol is going to come out of our forests, I believe, and that'll make them all that much more important too. I talked about forest land consolidation. We're going to be doing a study this year on a more efficient use of our school trust lands. Consolidation of our forest lands will give us more value to our schools. And the problem is that, as Senator Dill will tell you, there's not very many of us representing that part of the state. I represent an area that starts at the Lake of the Woods and goes all the way down to Mille Lacs Lake. And in the Senate, Senator Bach is most of the other forest land up there. This isn't to talk about southeastern forests, which are very healthy also. But I think the whole point here is that we have an existing asset here. I think it's important that we do the things that we've just proven that can be done, and that the best way to do that is to make sure that a certain percentage of a dedicated funding would go to forest, not only now, but as I mentioned, for the future. So I hope I'm preaching to the choir, but as we go through the day, I'm sure I'll be talking about this again.
Senator Saxon, you've been working on this issue for quite a while. You have an intimate knowledge of it. Perhaps you could answer, is there a minimum amount that the issue of the programs of forest legacy and reducing, increasing forest consolidation will require on an annual basis, and if so, for how long?
Well, that is a good question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. You know what, I really believe that this is, to some extent, a short-term front-end problem. The conservation easement, forest legacy program, has been very successful, but there's only so many large chunks of private forest land where you can use these forest land easements. We've seen that Forest Capital Partners, which was Boise Cascade, we're on our third project with them, and there's probably only a couple large projects left. And then We hope that UPM Blandon, which has some other beautiful contiguous forests, will cooperate. But at that particular point, we go to consolidation. And we're working on some of those problems now with rotating revolving loan funds and expedited exchanges. But I think this is all something we need to think about. I think what we said earlier in connection with this is that it would be appropriate to have a certain percentage, let's say 20%, for a number of years, almost a fixed number of years. And at that point, we should take a look at what we actually need, and it would be appropriate maybe to adjust it at that point.
Sunset or review?
What's the difference?
Yeah. Representative McNamara?
Well, thank you.
We'll move on to the next witnesses.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to catch up while these witnesses were here because I want to go back to what I visited before. And Mr. Bench, I appreciate your point about the mouse ears, as I'm sure both Senator Dill and Senator Fredrickson know that.
Squirrel.
Squirrel ears on the white oak. What I want to let you know is that actually is also the same size that's perfect to be digging white oak when you're going to do them and use them for bald and burlap. And it just so happens that when we had a four-hour break yesterday, I ran into, I believe it was either Representative Hilty or Representative Faust's district and tagged some trees that my son was having dug. And they were white oak, and they were about the size of squirrel ears, which is perfect. What my point is here, members, is I think if you look around the table, and you just heard Senator Saxog, sometimes folks say we need to have a certain number of citizens because the citizens are going to advocate for the outdoors or the environment or the prairie, and Representative Wagenius's case. We have at this table someone who lives on an island in Crane Lake and knows wildlife fishing that is unbelievable because I've been in the boat with him. We've got two farmers that are terrific environmentalists that probably in the last few days have found a way to get to their tractors and plow some ground, no different than Mr. Bench. Representative Saxog just spoke eloquently about the forest and living up there and knowing it. What they also have is they have an election certificate. Representative Tao represents the inner city of, there's five of us here at the table that are urban legislators. I consider myself one, even though I have farms and townships and spent 5 days in my district a couple weeks ago hunting turkeys every morning, unsuccessfully, I will say, but it was fun. We are here. We, for instance, could be on a group of 17. We would have election certificates, but I will tell you, we advocate for the outdoors. We live it. We feel it. We do everything. And I believe LCCMR, even though I was one of the ones when it went from 20 to 10 that got booted off, and I'm not on it anymore, and I had a great time while I was on it for the short time I was. I think you get buy-in when you have the legislators, and I like, Mr. Chair, your idea that the citizens have the ultimate authority, and if they don't, if they feel they're getting railroaded, they can speak up and control it. But I want to make sure that folks know Representative Tao brings a terrific perspective, and he is an outdoorsman, and he is a citizen, but he happens to be a legislator who has a election certificate. And I think as we move forward, we should keep that in the context. I think the sportsmen know us, think of us as fellow sportsmen. They don't think of us as a legislator sitting in an office somewhere. And I just think it's important as we move forward, Senator, that we all have buy-in and realize that.
Mr. McMillan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I like what you say, and will you promise me that you'll all be here for the next few years?
Mr. Chair, to that point, Mr. McMillan, we're just 10 of a 201.
I understand that.
We're just examples of them all. We could pick whoever else we wanted to pick, a different senator, a different representative. This is an example of what is here, and I think if the folks know that and we get support, that model is working, and I would have never told you I was going to be here today telling you that model works. I was, with Senator Vickerman, was so absolutely opposed to it, but it works, and I can see that it does.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fredrickson.
One more comment to Mr. Bench. Going back to when it's time to plant corn. Now, when I was a boy, we did not have oak trees on our farm. My dad said it was time to plant corn when the last snowdrift melted out of the windbreak.
A little early.
I have a degree in agriculture in the University of Minnesota, and I think it's time to plant corn when the soil temperature gets to 50 degrees.
That too.
Thank you, gentlemen. The next witnesses I have on my list are Dave Zentner, Shirley Hunt Alexander, and Dick Anven. Welcome to the committee, and if you all have someone who prefer to start first, by all means.
Ladies first.
Chairman Chaudhry and members of the conference committee, I can't tell you how delighted I am to be here today. My name is Shirley Hunt Alexander. I was married to Joe Alexander, the commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources, and in a sense, I think Joe sent me today. So I'm not speaking from any prepared remarks, and I haven't been intimately involved with this process. So if I start to cover things that you've already heard, please bear with me a little bit. I'll try to be as succinct as possible. The Hunt comes from the fact that when I was a new resident of Edina, my family built a house on Nine Mile Creek. And that little creek was just a joy and a treasure for me because it was going to be a place where my two sons could play, as I had with the creek up in up near Mille Lacs when I was a little girl. So it was pretty thrilling to me. And what I found out over time was, and it wasn't very much time, was that the city of Hopkins was dumping raw sewage into that little creek on a bypass basis with all good intent to take some of the pressure off from the Minnetonka watershed because they were short on lateral sewers. Thus began my whole exercise in government and the way that I began to grow and learn. And I would say that I have been and still am a staunch environmentalist. And when I started out, one of the things that happened to me was that I had probably more interest in nuclear power and siting and the waste disposal than I did in the natural environment around me. I loved it. I took it for granted. I'll never forget the time that one of the professors at McAllister said to me, "Today we're going to talk about wetlands." Well, I knew what they were. I was a farm kid at one point, and I knew that what you did, you filled them in and you made good crops. So we got that one straightened out. Well, since then, to say that we have, one of the things that I wanted to make very clear was that as an environmentalist, in quotes, I had a deep suspicion for sportsmen, if you will. They were users. They were maybe abusers. We had to watch them because you never knew what they might pull next, and we had to be careful of that. And what has happened to me over the period of the time that evolved from the 1970s to the present is that I've come to have a great regard and respect and trust for the sportsmen who do so much to keep our natural environment free and clear. This morning, and I don't think this is due to the sportsmen necessarily, but this morning when I looked out at my little creek in the backyard, there was a duck down there and an egret, and occasionally a deer will come through. It's almost a wildlife habitat right there, and I so appreciate that, having that. I think what I'm trying to say here is that I do see this as a very intertwined situation. We don't have environment over here and sportsmen over here. We come together. We come to our elected officials with the belief and trust that we're going to work together, not separately, that we don't have, some of us, particular prerogatives that give us the right to judge, and others of us that don't participate. So I want to speak to that difference between the House and the Senate. And I would urge you to give it some thought, even more than you maybe have. I'm an urban woman. I don't go out and hunt. I don't want to kill anybody. I mostly fish. And if Joe were here, we'd be doing it right now, probably, rather than here. But it's been a great adventure for me. I also when I had the privilege of working for Senator Durenberger. I did his environment and public works issues. And as a woman who has a master's degree in social work, my deep concern is for the future, for the kids, that's you, a lot of you, and the grandkids, and the environment that you're all going to have and inherit from us, if you will. That trust is so implicit in me and in everything that I do, and the trust that I have in you, too, to make the kinds of decisions that you're making and set up the kinds of systems that will really work and not be counterproductive. So thank you so much for that. And thank you for your thoughtful deliberations, because I know they're not easy, and we all come with our own biases and backgrounds. Right now, on the 14th of this month, which was just a couple days ago, I picked up the Star Tribune and read an article that just thrilled me, and it says, a whole new way for a lawn to be green, and it has to do, again, with Nine Mile Creek. Little Nine Mile Creek Watershed District is picking up some direction from the Rush Creek Watershed, and they're offering some stimulus to individuals, to property owners, and they're saying, well, if you will fix what we call a water garden, we'll give you $3,000. It has to be approved, and of course a lot of things. Some of the communities will be given $25,000 from the watershed, and then so why such enrichment? Across the metro area, watershed officials now agreed that meeting clean water goals will require small changes in individual yards as well as big changes in new developments, said Doug Thomas, the administrator. And interestingly enough, Rice Creek, that has already done this, is going to have a $5,000 amount that it will give. So what I guess I'm really reaching for here is this is a partnership that we're going to do together, and we're going to make it work, and it's going to be wonderful. Now, since there's nothing but budget going on, there's nothing but economics, there's nothing but money that's on our mind, I want to leave you with a quote that just grabbed me the other day when I was reading in the paper, and it's from an economist, appropriately so, John Kenneth Galbraith. I'm not sure, and this is a quote, I'm not sure what the advantage is in having a few more dollars to spend if the air is too dirty to breathe, the water too polluted to drink, the commuters are losing out in the struggle to get in and out of the city, the streets are filthy, and the schools so bad that the young perhaps wisely stay away, and hoodlums roll citizens for some of the dollars they saved in the tax cut. I urge you to build on that partnership that we can do together. It's just thrilling to me. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Hunt Alexander?
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Of course, Commissioner's legacy lives on and is unmatched.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Dave Zentner, and I live in Duluth, Minnesota, and I co-chair the Rally for Ducks, Wetlands, and Clean Water, and my partner, co-chair Lance Neth, who couldn't be with us this morning. Appreciate the opportunity to comment. I'll be brief. I know that we'll begin to sound like chorus frogs. Maybe that's appropriate for the time of year. And I'll try to focus on the two pieces of legislation. One of the interesting things to me is the people that come in and out of our lives, and listening to Shirley to my left this morning and the work that we've done together, it's pretty hard to follow that act. I was thinking this morning about 7:30 as I was standing on the Capitol steps looking out over the mall of April 2nd, 2005, and the 5,000 people that were there on behalf of Minnesota's natural resources, urging all of you and every member of the House and the Senate to join in the great campaign to restore Minnesota's natural resources. How far we've come since that day, the things that we've done together, and how very appreciative I am of that progress. And this is an important and an integral part of the process. I think it's extremely important. You've already heard that it's an important tool for those of us who will be going door to door, town to town, talk show to talk show, neighbor to neighbor. This is a tool that will be a very credible part of getting Minnesotans, many of whom are cynical, fair or unfair, about government expenditures, to bring them on board. This is critical. This is also critical, if we do it right, to those of us that are alive 25 years from now, being able to say that this gift that came this November of 2008 has made a definable difference in restoring constituencies, the attitudes of our citizens, maintaining and enhancing what we have. If I had Representative McNamara, that election certificate, and if I was in one of your chairs this morning, here would be some of the things that you'd hear from me. I came aboard as co-chair of the LCMR reform, representing the 8 citizens, with 0 legislators as part of my goal. I thought that the legislature should be the oversight body, the auditing body, develop the mission and the vision, and like a board of trustees at a private college or the regents at the university, signed off on whether the mission was being met. Lauren Solberg and I had great differences about that. We had great conversations. And as Representative McNamara pointed out, and I agree with him, the hybrid model, what the citizens bring, what the legislators bring, and in this endeavor, giving us great traction and credibility with your peers in the legislature, I think is a valuable feature. The council does need to include hunters and anglers. We don't want to lose that constituency, as was mentioned earlier. That's what brought us to the 1/8 for habitat. On the other hand, I want all Minnesotans represented on that council. That's very important to me. And I want high-quality men and women, not to get ourselves in a box with one of this and one of that, with very, very good intentions. But I want to create the best council possible, and I'm confident that people that hunt and fish are among the best and the brightest to sit on that council, and so are other interests. The scope and the range of the expenditures has been touched on this morning. We talked about the regional grants. We've talked about the Forest Legacy Program. I mentioned that I live in Duluth. Senator Saxhog and I have talked on how critical that window is in the Forest Legacy Program. I, however, would be suggesting that maybe we don't want to put a percentage on it, that if we had permanent easements in a given year or two-year period in that window of opportunity, we maybe should not limit ourselves. Or if they're not ready, and the best work that can be done is with wetlands and prairie habitat or watersheds along the Minnesota River, we should have the flexibility to suggest that high-profile, high-value, high-need issues should rise to the top. There's been a lot of conversation about the LCCMR plan, the strategic plan being done by the university. I would not want to limit the council to any plan, but to give that council the flexibility to touch that plan where it's appropriate, where it's meaningful, but not be limited to a particular plan. I think a sound and workable conflict of interest policy and processes are very good public policy and definitely need to be included, as well as reviews, audits on spending, and auditing the results. All should be included. This is a trust, a critical trust to the citizens of Minnesota. However, I do think that the term of the council, I would agree with those that have said that it seems a bit awkward to sunset in 6 years, and I am not a foe of sunset at all. But in this instance, it seems that the vehicle should go away in 2034, and that the review process that makes it clear and the authority, the statutory authority of God, should be enough to take care of it. The administrative expense allowed should be kept as low as possible, but I think it needs to be realistically reviewed in view of the fact that we have $91 million under the present economy, plus future growth and inflation, to end up with the lowest possible mark there, but one that is realistic. I mentioned earlier that I would be talking about being careful that we don't get in boxes as a result of over-definition. What I'm talking about is seeking generational representation, gender equity, minorities, all very, very important. They all need to be blended into the complex, but they all need to have qualifications. They need to be available. Those opportunities will continue as those terms expire. Regional partnerships, I endorse what Joe Dugan and others indicated about their how empowering they are to bring constituencies to the table. However, again, I would argue against starting out with a fixed percentage. I think the council should be allowed to define it in terms of what is the statewide capacity to match grants in 2009. I clearly don't know the answer to that question, and that certainly is a part of the equation. So I believe that determining the capacity, having an overarching strategy, and I think it is critical to make sure that the regional grant programs have matches, have accountability, are audited, and that might be something that you earmark, if you will, for a definite review. The concept, I'm all for, but it has to be done right, and it has to be brought back to the table. And I'll conclude my comments, and I thank you very much for all the work that you've done. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Questions for Mr. Zentner? Representative Ball.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Zentner, I wonder if you could go back to comments that I just heard you make about percent of matching grant programs. One, as you know, one of our bills, you comment, the House position doesn't specifically say a percent. The Senate does. But you talked about perhaps a compromise direction we might want to go down. Could you explain that again, determining the capacity available for matching grants? How might you envision that working?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, to the degree that I can, I'll try to explain myself. The shower was early this morning at 4:30 in Duluth, and I was hoping there'd be no hard questions. But, you know, I, by that I mean the capacity, for example, of the groups available to bring the matches to the table, the private capital available. A good example would be the three Saturdays ago, I guess tomorrow, we had a wonderful day dedicating the Roger Holmes Wildlife Management Area, over 1,036 contiguous acres near Osakis, a $1.2 million project, an absolutely phenomenal project. Lots of partners involved in that. So in a matching, in a regional grants program, I would be unequivocal that they have to be matched. I would want to discern what are realistic amounts for everything from large players like the Nature Conservancy, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasant Forever, to the local sportsman's club. And to understand the value of that statewide to the best I could, rather than getting hung up on a percent that is not realistic and losing time in getting resources to the ground. That's the best explanation, Representative Moy, I think I've got this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Zentner, then perhaps the council itself could be involved in setting that number.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moore, I'm a big believer in getting the best and the brightest and not limiting their ability to do that work and then make sure they're accountable.
Thank you.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I listened to what Senator Saxhog had to say, and I agree with him totally. And I also agree, I think, with you, Mr. Zentner, and Representative Moe, because this reminds me of my local snowmobile club. We're in charitable gambling in our local snowmobile club. And so we have a fair amount of money that we use for the things that are stated in lawful purpose. And in the beginning, and we've been in charitable gambling since about 1992, so that's quite a long time. And in the very beginning, when we first sat down as groups in that first, let's say, 5 years, we always had all these competing interests. First off, no one ever came to our meeting until we were in charitable gambling and we did have money. And once we had money, everybody came. And you had the people, well, we want to give 10% of our total yearly a profit to the school, and we want to give 15% to the fire department, and we want to give 20% to this. And then suddenly our purpose, which is actually building and maintaining snowmobile trails, somebody came in and said, geez, we need a snowmobile trail up to Ray, Minnesota, and that's going to cost $50,000. But what we've already committed in those early years, 10% to this, 15% to that, 20% to this, and suddenly we found ourselves not able to do the projects that we really wanted to do because we'd already made these commitments and the community began to expect them. And that's the reason that I'm cautious as I move forward. And I would want to caution this group, this committee, in looking at earmarking, and maybe that's not the right word of earmarking, but allocating. That type of allocation in any kind of statute, because you know it could very possibly be that the forest legacy and conservation easements and forest consolidation is the most pressing thing that we might do in the next 5 years, and it might require $50 million a year. Maybe it's $5 million. I don't know the answer, but when we start to divvy up the pot, we're going to run into the same problem we ran into with our snowmobile club. And then we're going to have a big fight on our hands because now the person that thought they were getting 10% of the pot is all of a sudden sitting on the back burner because the other guy got more because everybody overrode him and voted him. So I think you get the drift of what I'm thinking about. And so somewhere in there, I just want to caution us as we move forward down that line. This pot, secondly, is I'm a reasonably good salesman. And I would never want to be limited to how much that I could come to this council for. I mean, that would be like telling your salesman at the lumberyard, I'm only going to pay you $100,000 even though you sold $10 million worth of lumber. I mean, you always want to have the upside to what your project is. That if my project is the most important, it will rise to the top. And I think that's what you said, Mr. Zentner. And that's what we're going to fund this year or next year or the year after and let it be on its merits. So that's kind of my snowmobile club experience.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, I don't think there's any need for me to respond to that. I understand Senator Saxhog is absolutely correct. This is a huge issue in the North, so I don't need to repeat that either. You've all heard it and heard it from very credible sources. Thank you.
On the same token, Representative Dill, I'd perhaps direct our attention to the dedicated funding ballot initiative itself. And that sets out percentages because we want to make sure that there is a dedicated amount to a particular purpose. In fact, we do that with this whole ballot initiative says that 0.375% should be to the outdoors and the arts. So we have made the value judgment that a certain percentage should be guaranteed for a particular purpose. And then even within that 0.375, we have set out percentages. 1/8 for habitat. 1/8 for clean water. And then even within clean water, we have said there will be a certain percentage to drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
And then 1/8 a 16th will go to the parks, and then a 16th will go to the arts. And so while I agree we don't want to limit ourselves, there is still value to the expectation that we're creating. And that's what we're talking about today. What expectations should we create with the dedicated funding initiative should it pass the ballot? And so the only thing that the Senate's version says is that there should be an expectation that sportsmen are involved in the decision-making of one of the 1/8s. And that's not without precedent. I mean, there is a arts board that is scheduled to distribute the arts portion, after all. And by the way, theirs is completely earmarked There is there. They don't have to go through the legislature at all. So, I think we're talking. I think there. While I agree that we don't want to limit ourselves, I think we have to take a step back and see. Most of us agree that some demarcation, it doesn't have to be an earmark, but a demark of where the money will be spent and how it's expended is appropriate. Now, perhaps not that level of detail in the Constitution, so that's why we have a statutory proposal to say let's demark it a little bit more so that Ms. Hunt Alexander stated that we set up the kind of system that works for the distribution of what we are demarcating. So just that comment. So, but I don't disagree that we don't want to limit ourselves. I think you'll find agreement from myself and others that of course we don't want to strap ourselves down. And there is a fair consideration for the fact that we need to be careful how we demarcate, because you do, as in the charitable gambling snowmobile club example, you do create expectations. And so if that ever needs to change, someone is going to feel like their ox is being gored. So I think what we're looking for is a fair balance between the two notions. Further questions for Mr. Zentner? All right, Mr. Anfang.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dick Anfang, and in my work life, I'm the president of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. And within that council, we represent approximately 50,000 construction workers in our state in every corner of the state. I come to you today not necessarily wearing that hat, but using the experience of wearing that hat as how it relates to this issue. The way we prepare for our legislative agenda, we start, like everybody else, well in advance and try and find out the issues that are important to us as a building trades council and in our work life. And therefore, I come to you today with this not being one of our original agenda items. But it evolved because we are at the Capitol and we are an organized group of people who were asked, what would your members think about this fund, this possibility of citizen involvement, this possibility of protecting the environment and protecting hunting and fishing into the future through a dedicated fund? And so they posed the question to me, and I was asked to sign off on a letter. And being the president, and running under a board situation, you have to be a little bit cautious. So I went to my board and I said, you know, what do you guys think of this? What do you guys think of this issue? And I told them about it and passed out the legislation. And I said, I'm not just going to sign off and support this if this is something that you don't think our members would support. We've got a lot of other things to do, and by the way, I want to thank all of you for listening to us about our other concerns and job creation and all of that. Certainly there's possibility of some job creation here, but again, that's not necessarily why I'm here. But the response that we got by asking my board members to go back and talking to their business managers and them talking to their union members about this and the feedback that came back was really quite amazing to me. For a couple of reasons. Usually if I suggest something, I get a big fight. I didn't get it in this instance. And the overwhelming feeling that we got back in our discussions was that our members, spread out throughout the entire state, are a big portion of the sports and outdoor recreation environment in our state and contributors to the financial success of it. And they appreciate this effort to maintain that into the future in a way that can involve them. I know that some of our members are much more active than others. I know some of them are probably qualified to be on whatever board with whatever participation is available to them, and others are really more eager to just participate in their local community with their neighbors and have an opportunity to have a pet project or an improvement project that'll help the environment and sustain these great recreational activities that we have in Minnesota into the future. I'm also a grandfather of five little girls, no grandsons, five little girls, and I had an experience pretty gratifying to me just a couple of weeks ago. My daughter and son-in-law were down to the house, and I have a home out in the country, and I have a couple of guns displayed up above one of my pictures, high enough so that none of the girls can get up there, and my oldest granddaughter is going through gun training class right now. And this is, I didn't expect this, really. I really didn't expect it to happen. Her father's an outdoorsman and a fisherman, and they've got the boat. That's why they were down there, to pick up the boat. My oldest granddaughter came in, and her dad was there, and they were looking up at the picture of the turkeys and the two guns above it. She said to her dad, "Dad, check and see if Grandpa's guns are loaded." I passed the test, but it tells me that my son and my son-in-law wants her to be trained and trained right, and she wants her to be safe, but she wants to enjoy the outdoors. And I think I can bring to this table that story can be repeated and repeated and repeated throughout this state. And the efforts that are being made here, and I'm not the detail guy about how many should be on here, how many should be on there. I just think it's a great, great idea. The response I got from, we didn't touch every 50,000, I'm sure, but the overwhelming response was, this is a good thing. Continue to do it right, and we trust you to do it. I would also add, and correct me if I'm wrong, anybody, but I believe I read in the legislation that you've asked or required the legislative auditor to participate in the review of this thing every couple of years. I believe that's still there. Right. And in my my experience at the legislature goes back a few years, and I remember a time when, geez, when you brought up, boy, if something that I was involved in is going to be audited by the legislative auditor, it kind of put you on pins and needles. But I've learned to respect the integrity of the Minnesota State Legislative Auditor. I've learned to respect the process that that division of government goes through. They not only audit, as you know, for the monetary aspect of it, but they audit for the legislative intent, and they audit for the proper participation and due diligence of the stakeholders. And I can tell you that they are, from my experience, absolutely neutral. They go in, they find the facts, and they report them back as an advisory situation or recommendation situation sometimes. And just to have that in there, in this bill, I think is a credit to the bill and to the intent of the legislature. So I think you have something built in there that's very good. So I think I've covered what I wanted to say, and thank you for your work.
Thank you. Questions for the witness? Thank you, Mr. Anfang. Appreciate, and I appreciate everyone's comments. The next people I have on the agenda are Paul Austin, Bob Austin, and Kirk Schnichter.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Austin. I'm with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And I think the first question some of you may have is, what is a person from a group of green, litigious, policy wonk thinkers doing sitting at this table this morning with all of our compatriots from the hunting and fishing community? The truth of the matter is that MCEA has been part of this discussion for a long time. MCEAers testified at the first hearing ever on this bill. MCEAers testified and spoke at the first duck rally. We're a member of the duck rally. We've been part of Go Minnesota. We're currently working as part of Vote Yes. We believe in this process, and we believe in this bill. I'd like to just make some comments based more on the conversation. Dave Zentner is another member of the duck rally, reflected some of our more substantial points as well as anybody. But I would just like to make a comment around the word balance. It strikes me that everybody here is interested in some form of a balance around this issue. The constitutional amendment itself is an effort to balance resources going to the natural environment. It's an issue that has been out of balance in some of our opinions for quite a while. And so when you look at all the points that there are within this legislation, I would just encourage you to find the best balance that you can. A council that recommends spending to the governor and the legislature on habitat issues is part of that balance. We normally think of MCA in terms of water, but we know that there's a balance between water and habitat. What happens on the land affects the water and vice versa, so that makes great sense to us. Having a balance between all the citizens of the state, whether it be someone who hunts or fishes, or someone like me who just goes out in the SNA in their backyard and takes hikes on a regular basis. Those are very different users, but there's a very good balance that can be struck across all those places. We need to understand that there's a balance across the state in terms of the geographic and ecological distribution. So a council that understands that and represents that is also an important piece of the puzzle. We think that this discussion around prescribing percentages is another place where there needs to be a balance, and it's a tough one. This is really why all of you have the election certificates, because you get to make the tough call on the balance. There's a great argument to let the best issues bubble to the top and to fund them. There's also a desire to balance how that money is spread so that process doesn't somehow get out of balance down the road. And all of you are skilled at finding ways to craft language that creates ceilings and floors and is permissive. And I would just encourage you to strike a permissive balance as opposed to a prescriptive balance. Similarly, on strategic plans and guidance, it's in order to balance on something, you need to have a foundation. It strikes me that the Minnesota Conservation Plan is a great foundation, but I would encourage you to allow the language, again, to be permissive. So use that as the base, and then encourage this council to add information to that base. When you look out over 25 years, that's a long time, and information moves a lot in 25 years, and I just don't want to have anybody bound in their thinking at the start of this or at the end of this. I think another point of balance has to do with some of the conflict of interest language that both sides of the Senate and House carry. That's a very sound public policy piece. And having sound and workable conflict of interest language strengthens the council's recommendations. That is something that we would fully support, looking at this with our public policy hats on. The trick is, of course, making it workable so you don't exclude individuals who are of value to the process. That's not an easy task. There's many different ways to come about that, but I would just encourage that characteristic to be part of whatever you land on. Audits and reviews are extremely important. It's extremely important for both the function of the council, the function of the spending on the constitutional amendment dollars as a whole, and the confidence of the citizens. That's another sound public policy piece that needs to be part of this. And a balance, again, on administrative costs. Less costs kept in the machine, more cost dollars spent on the ground is a great thing. That's what everyone here strives for every day in state government. The council should be no different than that. And lastly, in terms of the terms and the sunsets on the council, everybody here is absolutely correct in that a sunset provision causes people to take a look back, a look in, and a check-in as to where they are. I would just encourage you to strike a balance between having some sort of a sunset provision and having sufficient time to be able to tell if it's working. I'm not sure the cycle is the same for a licensing bureau as it might be for something that has long-term targets on the ground. And with that, I'd like to say thank you very much for getting the constitutional amendment on the ballot already, and we look forward to passing this thing in November.
Questions for Mr. Austin? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you may remain at the table in case there are other questions that come up. Mr. Schichter?
Chairman Sauteray and Dale, members of the committee, my name is Kirk Schnitker. I hail from southwestern Minnesota and north central Minnesota, and I currently live in the metro area in the city of Champlin. The points made about balance are very, very important, and it's an important thing involving this matter, especially because we're talking about something that involves taxes. This is a very significant tax, and it's going to be perceived by the people in this state as something that they're very skeptical about. As I see it and from what I understand, we have a skeptical group of people, of voters out in the state of Minnesota. And I think this matter to pass on Election Day, we have a group of people, as many as 60 to 70%, who are going to look at this matter with skepticism as to whether or not they should vote for it or not. A major component part of that group that I'm really concerned about, I think that we could look at those people out there, and we can say some people are automatically going to vote for it, some people are going to be opposed to it. But the community that I'm really concerned about in this matter is the hunting and fishing community and some of those outdoor people. They represent a very large portion of that voter block that I think is going to be a very big swing vote. They're not all outstate. A lot of them are outstate constituent groups. We have a fair number of those folks that are metro areas. But I think about those large block voters in outstate Minnesota. They represent hunting and fishing clubs, deer hunters, people, their families, their kids, and so on and so forth. And the one thing I think that those people really understand in regard to this legislation and this bill, when it's on the ballot and how it's going to be spent, is plain language and specific goals for the spending involving that money. And that's one of the things that I'm beginning to hear a little bit more and more skepticism about as we move along. There was a time not that long ago when many of these people that were discussing this thing, the people that I think of outstate, some of these hunting and fishing people, who raised the issue when you brought up the idea of dedicated funding, and maybe many of them were oblivious to it. Now I'm finding that many of these people are not so oblivious to it, and they're actually, many of those people are very engaged, and they're becoming more and more engaged about how this money is going to be spent and how is this going to be governed. That concerns me. Don McMillan raised the point a little bit earlier that he says it would be a terrible thing to lose this by 1%. My concern is that I think that if we don't get those people that are engaged, outstate Minnesota, those sportsmen and women of this state, it's not going to be a 1% loss, it's going to be a much bigger loss. I look back, was it 10 years ago when we had the Hunt and Fish Amendment in the state of Minnesota that many of you folks remember? And that matter was a very significant thing. It's now part of our Constitution in this state. 77% of the people in the state of Minnesota voted for an amendment to protect the right to hunt and fish. We're a state that's about hunting and fishing and those interests and those needs. And I think that those needs and those interests are going to be a significant factor in this election. We need this matter structured, and I appreciate the balance to my fellow testifier in this matter. We need this matter structured so that there will be trust, that the tax will be spent properly, and not for projects that are not contemplated in the actual ballot initiative. We really can't squander this opportunity. Some people say if we don't pass this matter now and we don't have the correct language and we don't have the right enabling legislation, the right governance kind of council, we'll never see this matter again. We essentially have 5 months before Election Day. That's 5 months is going to be a very difficult time to send a message to these citizens as to why they need to vote for it. I had the chance to talk to a woman in West Central Minnesota who's very involved in some DNR fisheries matters. And her position was, at this point in time, she said she knows a lot of people at one time were supportive, but they're getting very, very skeptical as far as the governance and how the money is going to be spent. Her position was, and she told me yesterday, I don't know one person out of 10 at this point that will vote for this matter. That scares me. I spoke to another individual last night that I was fishing with on Mille Lacs and enjoying my time, and he's a person that is a very middle-of-the-road, middle-American, middle-type of a voter, and his position was, I would have voted for this thing. And I still might vote for this thing, but I have to know that money is going to be spent properly. He goes, but this governance issue is scaring me, and I'm concerned. It's an issue right now, and we need the sportsman's community to bring this back around so we can count on those 77% of the people that voted for that constitutional amendment 10 years ago to support this matter as well. This matter is about arts, parks, Senator Pogemiller's three-legged stool, that he's fond of talking about, and it's got some very important matters that are in there. But we need to make sure that we can do everything to make sure that this thing is going to be passed. Otherwise, I believe we're all wasting our time. There's a lot of money here. It's a huge legacy for all of you people, for all of us people to pass down for many years to come. and we're concerned that it be done right. I am significantly, my position is I'm in favor of the Senate version as is proposed. I'm very much concerned about the matching dollars. I think there are specific reasons why. One of the concerns that I hear from some outstate folks is it gives them a good target of shooting for the 20% number. I think it also buys a significant amount of citizen buy-in from outstate constituent groups that they know that they can participate. Whether this, no matter how this governance council is governed as far as the split between citizens and legislators, I think we want to ensure we're not significantly insulated from folks outstate, and I think the matching dollars do just that. I also support Senator Saxhog's versions and Senator Deal's versions regarding the forest legacy components, and I would encourage that language as well. Thank you. That concludes my comments.
Do you have questions for Mr. Schnitker? Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. My name is Bob Austin. I live in New Prague, and I am a member of the Sportsman for Change. I just want to say that I'm very much in favor. I want to see the Citizens Council. We've got to have the matching funds, and we've got to have the forest legacy. And it's been discussed here, this thing of having this sunset ruling in there, this is going to be a real complicated. This is not a good deal to have that kind of language in there. I guess what one of the things I got the Outdoor News little magazine here, and I got it last night, and I'm very much in favor of the Senate bill and the House bill. I am not. And when I read down here, here is one of the things under the House version, money would be spent in accordance with the Minnesota Conservation and Preservation Plan being written by the University of Minnesota Institute on the Environment and the consulting firm of Bonestrow and CR Planning. And I'll have to be very honest, folks. I looked at that and I thought, who the hell are these people now? Where are they coming from? I've been involved in this thing right from the get-go. When we put the rally together, the whole nine yards, I put a lot of time, got my own money into this thing because I believe in what we're trying to do. And I looked at that, and there's some other comments, you know, that people that are going to be on this board are going to have certain qualifications, whatever. You know, they got a master's or PhD degree in basket weaving and underwater aquatics or whatever it happens to be. And it's like we, the sportsmen, are going to be pushed out of this thing again. You know, I read this thing, it's just like getting a poke in the eye when I read this thing last night. And where I'm coming from, there's a very good reason why you deal with Gary Leaf and not me. Gary's like a nice surgeon, I'm a guy with a chainsaw. But where we're at is that the days of the legislature treating the sportsmen and the sportswomen of the state of Minnesota like the two bastard children, those days are over. We are a disorganized bunch, we have been. We're like a bunch of cats trying to herd. But I think we're finally getting our act together and exercising our political power and our political might, and we have to. We have to be on this thing. We have to be on this bill. And if this doesn't go through and if you don't put the sportsman at the top of the list, I'm totally convinced that we're going to be going into a lot of these districts and we're going to be doing Dean Johnson's on people who are not pro-sportsmen and sportswomen legislators.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
I appreciate all the testimony from everyone, but I don't think going down the road of political threats is really helpful to the discussion.
This is not a threat. This is just a fact of life. This is a reality.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Questions for the witness? Kate?
Mr. Chair, can I just...
Senator Anderson.
You may be aware, but the Finance Committee's meeting at 10
okay.
in the Senate. I don't know about what the House schedule is, but Senator Frederickson and I are both on Finance, Senator and Dill. Senator Dill.
I'm going to ask...
more witnesses?
I'm going to ask... I don't have any more on my list. I'm going to ask Senator Lessard if he wants to comment, and then that would be it for the witnesses, unless I've missed anyone.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I just want to make a brief comment, not really a question, so... I've been listening really carefully. I haven't said anything except for the one comment, but I guess my impression is, number one, that I think we could find a compromise pretty easily. I really believe that after listening to all of this discussion. And also, I have to point out for all the citizens who are here to give us their perspective that I hope you appreciate that we heard some contradictory testimony. And so even though I think you're all part of the same coalition, in a sense, we want you to be part of the same coalition. You know, some people said we want set-asides. Some people don't want set-asides for certain projects. So we're not going to make everyone 100% happy no matter what we do. That's pretty obvious. But I think that within the range of the House and Senate positions and what we've heard today, I really think there is compromise and the ability to get this done. And we have 2 working days left, members, so I hope we can just sit down and find a way to get this done. And like I said, no matter how it turns out, you're not all going to be 100% happy, and neither am I. But we got to get this done, and we all got to be on the same page 2 days from now when we adjourn the legislature. It's critically important because that's the only way it's going to happen. So I just had to say my 2 cents because I'm going to have to go.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I hope, Senator...
Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, you'll just wait just a couple of minutes.
I will.
I didn't know if I was going to testify here today, but let me give a tell you what happened, and you were there, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. About 9 or 10 years ago, I can't remember, when we started this bill, this started out as a hunting and fishing bill. I tried every single maneuver that I could in all those years to try to get compromises. At first, it was going to come out of the existing budget. The argument from you and others were, no, what, Senator Lessard, what budget are you going to take out of? You're going to take out of education, health and human services. I was asked by Senator Marty, if you remember, when you were opposing the bill, would you go along, Senator Lessard, with an add-on? And I said I would do the will of the legislature because I knew what I was running up against. I knew what I was running up against. I don't want to go into that now, but there's a lot of history that happened on this bill. And I tried, oh, how I tried. I tried every single possible maneuver I could to get this bill. It was on the Senate floor twice, but it started out as a hunting and fishing bill. And then what happened? The arts, when the arts got into it, there was an upcry throughout the state. A lot of people don't get the Minneapolis Tribune. A lot of people don't get the St. Paul Dispatch. But out there, even, excuse me, even to this day, the arts was a, I didn't know how to handle that. But I also know the legislative process. 3 weeks ago, I was at about 300 people, 250 or 300, I can't remember, not from here, from the other end of the state. And the first thing I was brought up, and I was a captive, obviously, I was talking about the constitutional amendment. And I was talking about how important it was for the sportsmen who brought this to the table to be the players and the decision makers on R1/8 of the budget, not the waters, not the arts, and not the parks. And they said, well, how, Senator Lessard, respected, you carried the constitutional right to hunt and fish. How can you, and with a straight face, quite that was kind of the word he said, we respect you for all the work you've done, support the arts. And I went out there and tried to explain to them that this, in the legislative process, it's trying to reach compromise. Just because Bob Lessard wants one thing doesn't mean that I'm going to get one thing. We have to work with the other groups. It takes this amount of, that's the way the legislative process works. And I think I convinced a lot of them that we did what we could to get to the point that we are now. And I'm absolutely convinced that the fate of this constitutional amendment is in this conference committee's hands. I'm absolutely convinced that it does not come out with a conservation partnership proposal, the forest legacy, and other criteria that allow us to be the major partners in making this decision, this constitutional amendment will fail. It will fail. On the flip side of this coin, I think conference committee, totally in the legislature, can be the salvation of this constitutional amendment. Give us the tools. Give me and all the people in this room the tools of going out and going to this constituency and say, look, this is something not for us, it's not for you, it's not for Senator Dale, it's not for you, it's for our future generations. It's the last chance, folks. And you, this conference committee, it's in your hands. This constitutional amendment is in your hands. There's nothing I want better to do, and all the members of this committee, the sportsmen and women, to go out and go to these groups and say, look, we're on board with this thing. I know I'll take off my summer to do this. We're on board with this thing. We're on board with clean waters. We're on board with all the other provisions in the bill. But give us the tools to go out to do that. Otherwise, clean water is gone. The arts is gone. The parks are gone. It will be gone. But on the other, I want to look at the bright side. Give us the tools to do this. That's all I'm asking. And if you do this, this conference committee will pass this constitutional amendment. I'm not going to go all the details. I remembered when I chaired the committee. When I got the targets, we get targets. You know what that's worth. When I looked what we got for game and fish on the pie chart, it didn't even show up as a sliver. It didn't even show up as a sliver. I remember, and when I was the chief author of the lottery bill, I did not do due diligence on the lottery bill. Don't anybody blame Bob Lessard, because we sold the lottery bill that was going to be the salvation. And Senator Fredrickson, you know what happened, started out with a Greater Minnesota Fund. Then it did a flip, and then it went to 50%, then 40% to the LCMR. And then what happened? It got, well, I'm not going to go into that. But every place we go, they ask what happened to the lottery fund. Well, I didn't do due diligence. I went out and sold it. I thought maybe the logic would prevail, and it didn't. You talk about the autonomy of the sportsman. We have the autonomy on the IRRB. I stood on the IRRB for 26 years. We have autonomy on that committee until the constitutional amendment ended, and then statutorily we gave that power to the IRRB. And some of the members here are on the IRRB. So there is precedent, I think, to give authority and decision-making process to those of us who are going to be asked to vote on this bill to help pass this constitutional amendment. And if I sound like I got a passion for it, I do. But I will tell you this. If you can come out with an agreement that we can support, you'll have me and all the other people that out there working their cans off to pass this constitutional amendment. I can't say more than that. These people have been far more articulate than I could ever be trying to explain the pros and cons of this bill. But, Senator Genius, I'm a representative. There's nothing I want more than clean water. And you can't have clean water and fishing disconnected. It's one and the same. And there's no attack on the clean water funds. We can work together on these issues to try to reach agreements. I'm the first one to support clean water, but you can't separate the two. So I think there's a boogeyman going on, floating around out here that is not necessary to be brought into this process. Now, I think I've said my piece. I want to thank you for giving the opportunity to testify. And again, I think the fate of this constitutional amendment is in your hands. I really do. That's it.
Questions for Senator Lessard, Representative Mull.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator, for your heartfelt comments and your work on this for many years. In spite of your somewhat strong persona, I know you've been in this body, and you know that in order to get things passed through here, as Senator Anderson said better than I could, that we have to figure out a way to get through this body before we can ever get to the ballot. And this is more a comment than a question, but you could respond if you want. We're going to do the best we can. You know, we have to pass this conference committee, and then we have to pass both of our respective bodies. That's our immediate challenge. And if we don't do that, we're not going to get to the ballot. So, of course, you're going to continue to lobby as you have so strongly until we're done, but we're going to then ask you, and we're going to need your help. When we get out of here, we're going to need your help to pass this thing. Because if it passes, it's going to be close, and you know it. We're up where we live, where I met you a few weeks ago in Longville at the gas station. we're going to get 50% there, barely. But we're also going to need to get a majority of voters in Minneapolis and St. Paul whose issue is clean water, and they don't maybe get up north as much as they should. So, you comment if you want, but you've been here. You understand what we have to do in order to get it out of this place.
Mr. Chairman, and last comment. Chairman, I keep saying the senators over here, reps over here. I get the two confused. I had them on the other side when I was here chairing the committee, and I chaired this committee for 14 years.
Senator, what side have you not been on?
I know other people have used that one, too. But I'll reiterate what I just said, that if you can pass and we can reach an agreement and bring us, I hope as you go forward, you bring us into this consulting, try to get back together what how we can work this thing out, that I guarantee you that myself, speaking, I will bring and everyone, a lot of, there'll be a lot of players coming out of the woodwork that have never been involved in hunting and publicly, persona, in hunting and fishing, but are really supporting us, that'll come out, that'll surprise you, that are willing to put them, their name on the, that put their name on the, whatever it takes, whether it's a commercial, whatever the case may be, that will come out and to support this bill. You'll be very surprised what we can put together by working together on both sides of this, this question. So that's all I've said. I'll do everything I can. We will pass it. If we can get this out, we will pass this constitutional amendment. Thanks.
Members, we are going to get this bill done today. I use the word today loosely, but this will be done today. But for now, we will stand in recess to the call of the chair, and so keep attuned to the notices and your emails.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for giving me the opportunity.
I know. They're going to meet today. They want to finish it. Steve, I forgot you're on finance.